The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest-growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to Breaking Banks. This is a historical episode. And it should be hysterical too, I guess. But no, this is our 100th episode. So if you guys have been listening to Breaking Banks, we started in May of 2013. We've been going that long. We've had roughly about 250 guests at those shows. We've gone live from six different continents. This is our 100th episode, so it's a really special episode. We have a bunch of amazing guests in the studio, which I'm going to get to in a moment. Just before that, just some of the news. Of course, PayPal acquisition of Zoom yesterday, approximately $800 million. I don't have the figures right in front of me. So that's a big deal. Everyone's talking about that today. There's some interesting news on the Bitcoin front with our friends in Barclays in the UK making a play for that front, making a formal move on that front. But one of the things that I was really interested in, of course, was, there's a lot of noise about the Greek struggles this week, the Grexit, and the euro. Did you see the Indiegogo crowdsourced bailout for so the Indiegogo crowdsourced bailout for the Greek economy is up to about €1.5 million.
Wow.
They've got a way to get to 1.6 billion, but they're getting on their way. And then, of course, the other one that I was really, and so you can check that out on Indiegogo, the other one that was interested me was there is a journalist out of the UK. She's an employment correspondent working for the Financial Times. Her name is Sarah O'Connor. And she tweeted out the other day, that was on the 1st of July, that actually in a VW factory in Germany, a worker had been killed by one of the industrial robots. Now, if you connect the dots here, her name was Sarah O'Connor. And so Twitter had a field day with this. The response to Sarah O'Connor, not Sarah Connor, mind you, but because out of the Terminator franchise, she said a robot has killed a worker in a VW plant in Germany. And the response was, please, Sarah O'Connor, take care of John Connor. He's our only hope now. And Skynet is close. Run, Sarah, run. So she was a bit bemused by this. She hadn't apparently seen the Terminator movies. So anyway. So let me get to introducing the guests in the studio today. We have some fantastic guests. We have John Stein from Betterment, the CEO and founder of Betterment. Welcome, John.
Great to be here. Amazing to be in the Moven offices.
Absolutely. Yeah, which doubles the studio for Breaking Banks. We actually sort of have a pop-up studio. We sort of do it where we need to, and sometimes we do it actually from a real radio studio. But today in the downtown K-Town in New York, the sun is out, it's hot, the air conditioning is broken in the office, and so we've got a temporary air conditioner. So if you hear some background noise, you know where that's coming from. Esther Dyson, welcome to the studio as well.
Glad to be here.
So we're going to introduce Esther as well. Some of you, of course, know Esther. She's a big player in the tech space, involved in many ventures. She sits on the boards of 23andMe, Eventful, Luxoft, Meetup Inc., et cetera, et cetera. So great to have her in. David S. Rose, the founder of Gust and New York Angels, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show, I should say.
It's a pleasure to be here in such august company.
Thank you. In July, nonetheless. Yeah, so so it's great. We've got a fantastic show. What I want to do is I want to start off with a bit of an update on Betterment. Betterment has just recently done a raise, a couple of months ago.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, just a brief overview of Betterment. We're an automated investing service, and customers come to our site. They tell us about their goals, and based on those goals and the time horizon of those goals, we create portfolios for them and then intelligently manage their money to get them on track to their goals in less time and with more peace of mind.
Okay, so just guys, we've had a couple of people call in to say hello. So let's take some callers. Who's on the line? We've got JP Nichols, have we?
Yeah, hey, Brett, it's JP Nichols from InnoSect and the Bank Innovators Council.
How are you, JP?
I'm great. Listen, I just wanted to wish my favorite disruptor many, many more episodes and congratulations on 100 big ones.
Thank you very much, JP. Glad to have you join us. And I think there's another caller as well.
Yeah, hey, Brett, it's Dave Corbino. How you doing?
Hey, Dave.
Congratulations on 100th episode. And I just want to say to your pal there from Betterment, I met your marketing team last night. They are killer.
There you go. He's got a smile on his face. Where are you today, Dave?
We'll take a plug.
Are you calling in from New Jersey or are you in New York today?
I'm in New York.
Okay. Well, you can catch us, of course, on live on the AM band 1160 if you're in New York. And thanks very much, Jay, for giving us your best wishes.
All right. Take care. Bye.
All right, John. Back to Betterment.
Yeah, we raised our last round. I guess it was in February. You'd asked, and we've raised over $100 million to date. We still have the vast majority of that in the bank. We've been growing. We've been investing in our team. We're over 100 people now, and we've been investing in the product. And we've attracted over 90,000 funded customers to date. We're managing $2.3 billion. We've grown over $1 billion in the last 5 months alone. So we're obviously accelerating our growth and on trajectory to do even more amazing things. You'll hear a lot more from us with some new product launches later this year.
Now, what do you think of this term robo-advisor that has crept up in the industry? How do you personally feel about it? Because you're often given that label, but it's a fairly simplistic view of the world, isn't it?
So I love it because when we launched in May of 2010, we were a voice in the wilderness. We were saying the way that people will invest in the future is going to fundamentally change. And there's lots of reasons why that's going to happen. And everyone just said, yeah, okay, whatever. And today, nobody denies that this change is coming. And a lot of people understand intuitively why it's happening and what it means for us, starting from a place of customer alignment, how the products are going to evolve when transaction costs fall to nothing and when people need more advice and we have all this data and we can give them better advice. All of that just kind of intuitively makes sense to people.
Yeah.
And so I see the robo-advisor handle as a way to popularize even further this thing that and I love the fact that there's now a category that's big enough that it has a handle like robo-advisor.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think one of the things that we sort of realize about the next disruption, particularly AI, and you guys might have some thoughts on this, David and Esther, but there was this recent Oxford study out of Oxford University that looked at jobs that were likely to be disrupted over the next few years. And of course, at the top of the list with about a 98-99% certainty of or probability of disruption were things like bank tellers, loan officers, claim assessors for insurance companies, and things like that. This is predicated on the fact that AIs will be better at certain predictable decision making and processes of sort of thinking than humans, who tend to be flawed and make mistakes and have biases and things like that. What are your thoughts as to the?
My gut is that that's just one little piece of the whole equation. I mean, if you look at the jobs that have already been disrupted the entire service economy, the intermediary economy. I mean, you know, what happened to real life travel agents and stockbrokers, obviously, with things like Betterment, and you know, ticket agents at gates and real estate brokers with for sale by owner and taxi dispatchers with Uber. So the entire intermediary level is disappearing and the service level is disappearing.
Yeah. So the intermediaries are disappearing, but not, I think, people making judgments, assessing character, stuff like that. I mean, I think the transaction costs are going down to zero. I don't need somebody to basically, if I want a portfolio of oils, I can let a robot select the oils. But the fact that I want to do oils versus, say, green companies, or that I have a fondness for Russia, or, you know, whatever it is, I think there's still a lot of room for the human decision making when you're talking more about moral, ethical, just preference or taste versus implementation, or once you've made that decision, assembling the portfolio.
Absolutely. And I've coined that voluntary reintermediation.
Voluntary reintermediation.
No, seriously. If you think about it, in a world that is being disintermediated, there will be the transaction costs are going to zero.
Yeah.
And now you can voluntarily choose to put
you're
back
to,
in the equation.
But you're going to have to pay for it.
My favorite one, 20 years from now, Four Seasons hotels will be advertising human room service.
Right.
We don't have no stinking robots bringing you your food. We've actually got a nicely dressed local person with culturally appropriate comments as she or he serves you this local cuisine.
I think it's an interesting to think about. As the world becomes an ever more efficient place, which is what's happening, what will we choose to do with our time? And we'll have that choice. We'll be able to decide what our careers are to a greater extent as the basic necessities of life become ever more freely available.
Right. And then the whole thing of teaching and caring and the sort of the human socialization part is still going to be huge.
So we have another caller quickly. We'll just go to Sam Moll calling in from, where are you calling in from, Sam?
Hey, Brett, I'm calling in from Jacksonville, Florida.
Jacksonville, Florida. There you go.
How are the waves?
not good enough.
Not good enough. He's still in the office.
So he's listening to the radio.
Yeah, he's listening to the radio. So, Sam, what can we do for you? Do you have a question? Or?
Hey, congrats, Brett, and busiest man that I know in fintech, the James Brown of fintech. But even more importantly, to your producer, Rachel, you deserve a holiday, Rachel. Make sure Brett
gets she
one.
Does. For those of you that don't know Rachel, I mean, I mention her enough on the show. She is the producer. And, you know, I probably owe another pay rise after this, getting to 100, because the show would not happen without Rachel. Sam, thank you very much for recognizing Rachel, and thanks for calling in, man.
No problem. Congrats.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, literally, I'm just the talent. Rachel does all the organizing. You guys were on the receiving end of that, right? She does all the organizing.
Mm-hmm. Very efficient.
I just turn up and speak, you know, and makes it all very easy. Thank you, Rachel. Maybe we'll get Rachel to come in and say hello. She's listening to the show from the other room, but we'll get her to come in and say hello before the end of the episode.
I hope she's smiling.
She should be. She's done very well. So, John, I've got this thesis, and you know, given that you're right in this space, let me throw this at you. Ultimately, what most people want from investment is they want maximum return for minimum risk. But there's another element of this, which is the passion element, you know, and the personalized or your own, you know, thoroughness. But it recently, some interesting study came out in the UK talking about crowdfunding. We had a reporter on this or a commentator on this on the show a few weeks ago, and she said 60% of people that participate in crowdfunding platforms, it's their very first investment, which I think is very interesting because identifies a fact that, you know, for many people, there's this personal element of investing. So how do you, I know how you get the risk-return balance with a robo-advisor, but how do you get that passion, you know, and the interest reflected in your portfolio with a robo-advisor?
There are different reasons that people invest, and some of it has to do with life stage and general financial situation. Some people are investing because they get a kick out of it. They're doing it because it's a fun thing, and those might have been, you know, picking stocks on E-Trade in the late 90s and early 2000s, or and today they might be, you know, picking things to invest in on Indiegogo or other crowdfunding sites. But the reality in this country today is that most of us who want to have a decent and good standard of living in retirement have to save a lot on our own. We've moved away from a defined benefit sort of society, which we were in the past. Since the 1980s, we've moved toward an almost purely defined contribution society. And it's crazy to me that we haven't put in place as a society obvious great choices for people to invest in. We've forced the population to invest, but we haven't made it very clear how to do that for most people. Only 1% of Americans have access to a fiduciary advisor. And so for most of us, we're left up to our own devices, and we're not programmed, we're not evolved to deal very well with the complexities of modern investing. And so for us, our place in this is to provide that comfortable feeling of defined benefits for the vast majority of Americans who have lost it and need it. So we help with advice and getting people to the right place.
But you don't actually promise defined benefits. You promise risk adjustment.
We try to optimize your returns.
Right.
But I think that over time, you'll see an increasing move toward higher levels of certainty. And we will not promise defined benefits, you're right. But there are products out there, things like annuities, exactly, and insurance products that combined with an intelligent portfolio can give you at least a floor and a sense of certainty about the future.
And that's the absolute biggest single problem with this whole new world of investing that we're all in, right? Whether you're picking stocks or whether you're doing crowdfunding or equity funding, angel investing, as Esther and I do, there is a complete, realistically, disconnect between risk and reward. So everybody who does all of these crowdfunding things and realistically all these angel investments, they all see the reward. They all see the Uber, Facebook, and whatever. And they manage to, the emotional side of them manages to make the risk just disappear. And so
Until
they experience it. Yeah. But, you know, which is why the typical profile of an accredited angel investor is, you know, they'll invest for a year, maybe 2 years. They'll do two deals, three deals, four deals. And then somehow they won't get the 30x return that they were expecting with it, and then their spouse says, okay, that's enough.
stop playing with that.
They run out of money.
Right.
But there's one point worth making about both Indiegogo and angel investing. If you put money into the stock market, you're trying to get some money back. You look at the risk, the reward, whatever, but you're not actually changing anything. Whereas if you do Indiegogo in theory and angel investing also in theory, you're actually investing in something that would not exist without you and a few other people's money. So it's a very different sort of thing. You're not simply trying to get something out of a machine. You're actually trying to create something along with other people.
Yeah.
But that
is primary versus secondary. Absolutely.
Yes.
And so we love angel investing.
Exactly, because we like to interfere and make things happen that wouldn't happen without us.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, you part of the reason you pick in angel investors is obviously their money, but you also pick them because, you know, at an early stage, as an early stage company, you need the network and influence of angels as well, right?
Well, that's the way it should be. Some have it and some don't. I mean, that's the challenge.
Yeah. So, John, what's happening for Betterman this year? You know, you're growing, obviously, but what are your big milestones this year? What's exciting for you?
Yeah, we've already more than doubled in size this year. Maybe we'll do it again before the end of the year. That'd be nice. We've hired a bunch of people. We're expanding here in New York. We're on 23rd Street, just a few blocks from you. We've just launched, I think, the most exciting feature of the year so far, which was our retire guide that takes into account your external accounts, things like your 401k, your pension, your Social Security, and taking in all of that information tells you how much you should save every month in order to be on track for a great retirement, and tells you where to invest, even if it's not with Betterment. So we'll tell you, you know, this is how much you put in your IRA, and you should contribute this amount to your 401k, even if that's held away. So it's really great advice, and it's a tool that everyone should use.
Okay, so Duana Blumstrom is calling in from London. Duana, is that where you are?
Yes, London, and I don't want to interrupt you because this is really interesting. But I just wanted to congratulate everyone and the team for the 100th episode. And then just say that with all the noise in the industry, everybody knows that if you haven't read Bank X.0 and been to Finovate and most importantly listened to Breaking Banks, then you have no business
saying
you're a fintech.
So that's a great plug.
Congratulations. Let's just keep making another 1,000 of them. And
yeah,
I'll let you guys get back to your conversation.
Thanks, Duana. All right, guys, listen, we're coming up to a break. So after the break, I'd like to learn a little bit more about Esther Dyson and David S. Rose as we continue listening to Breaking Banks. This is our 100th episode. If you want to follow the conversation on Twitter, the hashtag is Hashtag breaking banks, of course. And a quick shout out to Ron Shevlin, who said, robo-advisor is a really terrible term. Reality is much of the advice disseminated by human advisors was already robo-generated. So I thought that was a interesting quote, but we maybe can talk about that after the break. You're listening to Breaking Banks. We'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors.
It's been probably the best thing we've ever done, without a doubt.
In 2011, Duane Blomstrom and Maniga headed to the first Finovate in Europe.
We were a very small company back then, 6 people. We had decided that we were going to actually demo, which was a big step for a small company at that time.
After winning Best of Show, they grew to be a European market leader in personal financial management.
Pipeline essentially exploded as a result of this. It essentially put us on the map.
So why do they keep going back to Finovate?
It keeps us honest innovation-wise.
Register today for Finovate Spring 2015 in San Jose on May 12th and 13th and experience future fintech first.
When you're looking for the right place to eat, there's an app for that. When you need directions getting there, there's an app for that. And if you're trying to make a healthy choice, there's an app for that. But what about an app that tells you how you're doing with your money? Now, there's an app for that. It's called Moovin', a free app and debit account that automatically tracks your spending. You get real-time feedback with every purchase you make and a debit account with no overdraft or monthly fees. So if you want to stay on track with your money, download the Moovin' app for free on iPhone or Android and check out Moovin.com. That's M-O-V-E-N.com.
So, banks have a nice little exchange rate going on between themselves, but another, bigger exchange rate for you when you want to send money home or overseas. And they'll throw in some bank charges too, just for good measure. Not really fair, is it? But what if you could set your own exchange rate? That would be currency fair. CurrencyFair.com is a unique peer-to-peer marketplace that means you get a better rate and get to bypass those bank charges. You can't say fairer than that. CurrencyFair.com, the smarter way to send money home or abroad.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin' is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin' today.
The successful businesses of today do everything they can to meet the needs of their customers. But outdated IT systems mean that banks often struggle to offer the same level of personalized service. SunTech is working with some of the world's leading banks to help them provide the products, offers, and services that their customers need and want. Visit suntechgroup.com to find out more. That's suntechgroup.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, you're back with Brett King. This is Breaking Banks, our 100th episode, live from New York City. We have in the studio with us John Stein, the founder and CEO of Betterment. I got that right, right? Yeah. Esther Dyson and David S. Rose. So now, if you guys don't know Esther or David, then, well, that would be unusual.
Well, because, certainly in Esther's case.
Yes. Don't be so modest, David, please.
It's just there's two David Roses. There's a pretender and the real one.
That's right. That's right. So maybe let's start with Esther. Esther, you know, you've been in the tech field for a while.
So delicate.
you know, for a while. And you, you know, you're involved in all sorts of things. You know, why technology? What inspires you about it? And what drives you every day? Because you, you know, you, you're still so active in so many things.
Well, I'm not dead yet either. My parents are both scientists. So once I finished college and got my freedom, I started educating myself about whatever was interesting. Yeah. And I actually worked on Wall Street for 5 years from 1977 to 82. And then bought a newsletter from a guy called Ben Rosen, who was the David Rose of his time, perhaps, and just watched this whole thing shift from PCs and toys to software to the internet to social media. And then honestly got a little bored with all that. I trained as a cosmonaut for 6 months in Russia.
Awesome.
And this, what you're sending into space is bodies.
Yeah.
So there was a lot about space medicine and a lot about space plumbing. And I got more and more interested in healthcare and then realized healthcare is really stupid.
Yeah.
Let's invest in health. It's an asset that pays dividends just like a mortgage, you know, in a home. So how can we turn health into an equity investment instead of to a rental property? And that's what I'm working on right now.
There is so much going to happen. Just even, you know, when we take the impact of something like the Apple Watch or a Samsung SIM band, that sensor network on our wrist, and the ability to do longitudinal analysis on your heart health and be able to predict a coming heart attack.
Yeah.
I mean, you compare the ability of that technology versus a doctor with an EKG or ECG in a surgery going, oh, it looks okay now.
Yeah.
It really is pretty fundamental shift, isn't it?
But actually what you want to do is go even further back and eat a donut or eat a nice, healthy breakfast of oatmeal and eggs and look at the impact on your blood sugar.
Right.
So that it's not simply detecting what's going to happen, but changing what's going to happen. The same way insurance companies, they don't simply insure you. They go inspect your property for dirty, oily rags. They make sure you're emergency exits are open unless you're in Bangladesh or something. And so it's using the information for feedback that's so important.
Now, what was it like? You must get asked this a lot. What was it like growing up with a father who was, as brilliant as your father was and had a scientific mind like that? Was he constantly challenging you?
Well, growing up in my family was just like growing up in any family.
Sure.
It felt completely normal. So he sort of expected us to be smart, and one of his favorite things when we asked for help with homework was to say, don't pretend to be stupider than you are.
Right. That's a good,
but
I should use that with my kids.
But they were great. They let me, I lived in England when I was 13 with another family.
Wow.
I lived in Morocco with my boyfriend when I was 17, and they sort of gave me both freedom and responsibility.
How do you describe your father when people ask about him?
He's the guy everybody thinks got a Nobel Prize, but he didn't. And the thing he's proudest of is his 16 grandchildren, 15 of which I saw last week at the first grandchild's wedding.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a big fan of the whole Dyson Sphere concept, of course, but from a sci-fi perspective, it's been...
Not just sci-fi, sci-reality sometimes.
Sometimes. David S. Rose, the founder of New York Angels and Gust. You're a New York staple. In fact, the Rose family is sort of in the foundations of New York, isn't it?
I'm actually listening to Esther. I'm actually thinking about both of our parents.
It was normal, right?
It was normal. I mean, both Esther's parents and my parents are both still alive, still active, still completely compos mentis, in their 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
During the dot-com boom in the 90s here in New York, I was a finalist for the E&Y Entrepreneur of the Year Award. My father won it in 2003, here in New York, right?
So that's awesome.
I come I'm a third generation entrepreneur. Interestingly, I think I may be the world's only third generation angel investor. Because my late great uncle, after whom I was named the original David Rose, was the angel behind the portable kidney dialysis unit, vascular stapling, hyperbaric operating chambers, desalination projects in Israel. I mean, this is a guy who in the 1950s and 60s was doing this kind of stuff. And at that point, it wasn't termed business angel investing. Nobody had a clue as to what it was. Even in the family of pretty bright people, they said, oh, that's just Dave's playthings. I mean, it's, you know, what is that weird stuff he's doing? And I was the only one who actually found it sort of interesting. So that's where I sort of got that from.
Now, I thought it was very interesting. One of the quotes that you had about, and it's in your Wikipedia entry, which is in 2010, you were talking about Air Media, an early wireless internet information network. You said, when Air Media went down, it was the single biggest disappointment of my life at that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, you're very passionate about this stuff. This is not, you're not just an angel investor. You actually...
Well, you know, Benjamin Franklin wrote his own epitaph for his tombstone, and it reads, "Here lies Benjamin Franklin, printer," because he considered himself a printer, first and foremost.
Right.
The fact that he was a statesman, invented the post office, and so on and so forth, was secondary. In my case, you know, here lies David S. Rose, entrepreneur. So I've invested in, you know, 110, 115 companies at this point, founded New York Angels, and so on and so forth, wrote the book. But I consider myself, first and foremost, an entrepreneur. And so entrepreneurs start companies. They do things.
Yeah.
And so I started my first company as a child when my younger brother was a magician. He did children's birthday parties. And so I convinced him that he needed to have marketing communications materials. So Rose Productions provided his headshots and business cards.
How
and
old
posters.
Were you, Rickin?
Oh, 10 or 11.
Yeah, that's great. That's an entrepreneur.
Well, the only problem was, you know, after about 2 years, my one client realized that the sum total of his revenue is equal to the sum total of my revenues. So I lost my client.
Yeah.
But then I started companies in high school, college, business school, after business school, with my business school professor. If you're an entrepreneur, it's in your blood. You got it. You just got to do it.
So I have two questions for you guys. And John, you might jump in here as well. But you've traveled extensively. You've lived around the world, Esther.
Right.
I'm not sure about you, David.
I haven't lived, but I've traveled.
Yeah, you've traveled extensively. So why New York?
So I live in New York, but I'm usually somewhere else.
Right.
I'm just not anywhere else in particular.
Right.
Yesterday I was in Prague. I was in Hawaii and California and London and Germany and. New York's a great place to head out from.
Yeah. Good network.
I'm scared of moving to Silicon Valley because I think if I lived there, it's so pleasant.
You might not want to travel.
Stay. And they're so blind. Yeah. The one thing New York knows is that it is not the center of the world.
Right.
It sees the rest of the world around. The world comes through. But in Silicon Valley, they really... There's a bubble there, which is the bubble of not knowing there's a world outside.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I was in Silicon Valley a few weeks ago, and as we were sort of gearing up for our B round and met someone, they said, you know, it's quite difficult to live in Silicon Valley unless you have a smartphone now because everything runs on apps, you know?
Yeah.
And it is. They're in a bubble, you know?
Well, but that's in a certain sense, that's true in New York as well.
Yeah, yeah.
When I first went,
you can walk out and find a store. You don't need...
I mean, it's you don't just, have to. It's optional. In other words, the apps are here, and they are on top of an infrastructure that is in person. Although, you know, when I first went out to Silicon Valley in the 90s, and you get off the plane at SFO, and boy, it's like 70 degrees, and the sun is shining, and there's one perfect cloud in the sky, you say, holy moly, what have I missed? You know, then the next day, you wake up, and 70 degrees, and there's this one perfect cloud in the sky, and and you say, it's like this every day?
Yeah.
And then the third day, you wake up at 70 degrees, and there's one little cloud in the sky, and you say, boring, you know, back to New York.
And everybody's male. And
male and white
but you know we do have the advantage of having water here in New York City. So
and culture
and culture.
But that's it. The real difference in terms of the startup communities on the East Coast and the West Coast, particularly New York and the Valley, is that in the Valley it's a one industry town. I mean, everybody, lock, stock, and barrel, from the Starbucks to the airport to the whatever, is in tech. Whereas here in New York, despite the fact that we are now, by size, the second largest in the world and the fastest growing, we've outstripped California in terms of speed of growth, we are nevertheless a tiny small part of the world capital of finance, of advertising, of fashion, of food, of all these other things.
Yeah, and
publishing,
publishing media, sure.
So I guess then we're not in. Are we in a bubble, the fintech? space?
No, I think what we're actually feeling our oats at this point, because people have just realized fintech was one of the areas that was late to the table.
Absolutely.
And so
that's my thesis as well.
And so, for example, we've recently opened a real estate technology accelerator here in New York called AREA, A-R-E-A, down at opposite the New York Stock Exchange, which is focusing only on tech companies applied to real estate. Real estate is even worse than tech. I mean, there's like no tech advancement here for 30 years while the rest of the world is moving ahead. So, very relatively recently, right? Zillow and Trulia and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And
Airbnb is real estate in a sense.
I mean, that's really almost hospitality.
But it's turning, it's time slicing assets. And that's something the finance people have done forever.
Right.
They do overnight lending.
Yeah.
Although, really interesting, I was having a conversation with a major New York real estate figure the other night about Airbnb. He was absolutely off the charts. His point was that philosophically, if you say, okay, well, you know, the Hilton or whatever can rent rooms without, you know, smoke detectors and without emergency exits on a one-day basis and so forth, they do it. But it's not really, if you're putting your finger on the legislative scale.
Oh, yeah, it's like Uber. It's going to get compressed because they're going to have to put in more insurance, more regulation, more all this stuff.
As long as it's equal playing. But that's the problem. You know, there's nothing theoretically wrong with the concept of an Uber or a concept of Airbnb or a concept of sharing. But on the other hand, you can't say people who are doing this for a living have to have a separate set of rules if there is a safety rule or something else.
You need to do this. And
right.
It will happen.
Yeah,
I think so too.
Hey, we got another caller, and then we'll come back to you, John. Cy Taylor is calling. Where are you calling him from, Cy?
I'm calling in from sunny London, Brett. How are you, sir?
From sunny London. You had the hottest day on record, or hottest day of the year yesterday, right?
Indeed. Wimbledon was 41 degrees, but I hear level 39 in the fintech world was still hotter, man.
Level 39. That's very clever. For those of you that don't know, level 39 is the main incubator for fintech startups based in Canary Wharf in London. So, what do you have any questions for the crowd today?
I'm interested in how the crowd feels about the different sources of funding. Picking up on the last thing we were saying there, like, is it a bubble? The new elements of capital coming into the fintech arena, so you've got the likes of banks now starting to really disrupt themselves by paying external startups to do their innovation for them. Is this, you know, is that a sign of a bubble, or is that just a change in the market dynamic and changing how banks disrupt themselves? And could that be skewing people a little bit? Because I think that's misleading people. Fintech is hot right now, but is it?
Let's see what David has to say about it.
What's happening is not a bubble. It's a lot of tumult because nobody quite knows how it's going to play out.
Yeah, because it's new.
I mean, the stuff that all of us are doing, whether it's Gust or Betterment or Movement, these are all companies that are doing new things, disrupting an industry. And it's not that it's a bubble. It's the fact that the industry hasn't been disrupted. And so until it all shakes out, until you end up with...
Absolutely.
I don't think you're ever going to have steady state in the future. We are in this exponential world and things are going to be continuing to change.
Absolutely.
But until we at least see how it's going to change, there's going to be a lot of tumult, and so that might feel like a bubble in certain areas, but it'll all filter itself out.
There was a long period of time after the 2008 crisis in particular when the banks and financial services companies all became very inward-looking, and all that while technology is racing ahead in several other sectors, and they were investing nothing. In fact, they were cutting off any programs that they had in new product development. And this was the time I used to consult to banks from 2002 to 2007, just before this time. And even then, even in that period, they were underinvesting in technology and customer experience relative to other industries because of the regulatory barriers.
Right.
So now all of that has kind of been, first of all, they've underinvested for a long time, and it got to a point where a few companies, you know, there was enough demand there that companies kind of overcame some of these regulatory barriers, and some of the barriers have changed now, and you're probably seeing some of this in Gust and so on. And so I think there's a backlog of demand.
But there's also a backlog of regulation. I mean,
absolutely.
Like, you can't do a transaction now without three phone calls because of all the Know Your Customer regulations. And again, it's sort of, the incumbents are dealing with this heavy regulatory system, and the startups are kind of avoiding that so far.
That's not totally true. Betterment is a fully regulated entity. We're a licensed broker dealer. We're an investment advisor. We have lots of legal team on staff and ops team. So
some of the transactions.
Yeah,
the sharing, particularly the sharing economy. But it's interesting. So SWIFT, the banking industry's 10,000 financial institutions created something called InnoTribe, which is a competition just for the sole purpose of getting innovation into the world. And they've done this worldwide search to find innovation. And we were fortunate enough to be named the world's most innovative startup 2 years ago with Gust in terms of equity funding. But I think in terms of investing at a mass scale, which is what Betterment is doing, the transactional stuff, the banking things that Movin is doing, the stuff that we're doing at Gust in terms of equity financing, both financing for startup companies, which is a one big area, and then the other hand of the investing for increasing numbers of mass affluent and so on. You're seeing a sea change in the way that the world's going to operate in the future.
Okay, guys, well, listen, let's take a break, and we'll come back after the break. We have the New York Commissioner going to talk about financial inclusion in New York. So come back. You're listening to Breaking Banks live from New York.
Time. There's never enough. You just don't have the time to search out all the latest banking innovations from around the world. But the good news is, we've already done it for you at Banking Reports. 700 hours of research goes into each edition of our Global Banking Innovation Monitor. Be smarter and get one step ahead. Get Banking Reports sent quarterly to your inbox. To subscribe, follow us on Twitter at banking_reports.
The successful businesses of today do everything they can to meet the needs of their customers. But outdated IT systems mean that banks often struggle to offer the same level of personalized service. SunTech is working with some of the world's leading banks to help them provide the products, offers, and services that their customers need and want. Visit suntechgroup.com to find out more. That's suntechgroup.com.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Movin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase, and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Movin today.
Banks. Who needs them? Okay, we all do. But if you're sending money overseas, you could do without the rip-off exchange rates and bonkers bank charges. That's where Currency Fair comes in. CurrencyFair.com lets you exchange currency direct and transfer funds to bank accounts worldwide. So you get a fair exchange rate and get away from paying those crazy bank charges. How good does that sound? I know, really good. Find out more at CurrencyFair.com, the smarter way to send money home or abroad.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag #BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. Before the break, we were talking about fintech. We were talking about New York's role in the fintech explosion. Is it a bubble? Isn't it a bubble? And, what are some of the things that are happening? Now, the conventional wisdom would have us believe that as economies improve, and as life gets better, the whole, GDP increases and productivity increases, that more and more people will have wealth and therefore more and more people and jobs. And so more and more people will come into the banking system. But in the United States, 25% of households are either unbanked or underbanked, according to FDIC statistics. And so this sort of this flies in the face of conventional wisdom. So is there a role for fintech to solve this problem? To explore this, we are going to welcome another guest onto the show. This is Julie Menon. She is the commissioner for the Department of well, Julie, I'll let you introduce yourself properly because I'm going to mess it up, I think.
Oh, well, thank you, Brett. I'm commissioner of the New York City Department of Consumer Affairs.
Department of Consumer Affairs. I was going to say Consumer Services, so I'm glad that I got you to clarify that. And now, how many people are unbanked in or fall into this gap in New York City?
Sure. There are 825,000 unbanked New Yorkers currently, and half of them used to be banked but left the banking system because of overdraft charges, hidden fees, high minimum balances. So one of the things that we have done in our Office of Financial Empowerment, which is housed in the Department of Consumer Affairs, we have a product called the Safe Start Bank Account, which has no hidden fees, no overdraft fees, and a minimum balance of $25 or less, and it's offered by a number of banks and credit union partners that we have.
That's pretty cool. You know, we had coined that phrase here on the show. We call them the debanked, mm-hmm. And because this was a big trend during the financial crisis, people dropping off. We had about 1 million checking accounts closed in the United States during the financial crisis. So one of our regular contributors to the show, Ron Shevlin, coined that phrase, the debanked, and it's really applicable. But how do they survive without bank accounts, Julie?
Well, that's one of the problems of these 825,000 New Yorkers who are unbanked. They are largely relying on fringe financial services like check cashers to pay bills or cash payroll checks or buying money orders and other very costly financial services. We clearly want to move people away from that, and that is why our Safe Start bank account is a really important option that is out there. We run 30 financial empowerment centers in New York where we help people in debt. So we help people, New Yorkers who are having debt issues. People come in with all of their bills. We create a budget. We help to consolidate their debt, improve their credit scores. And then if they're unbanked, we want to get them into this very safe and secure banking product. We also do asset building work around the earned income tax credit and offer free tax preparation sites around the city as well.
Are you familiar with the work that Lisa Servon has done in this space, Julie?
Yes. Yes, I am.
So we've had Lisa on the show a few times. It's really fascinating. You know, the fact is that some of these people that don't have any choice that go for these alternative financial services. But we're now starting, you know, like the growth in the fastest growing deposit product in the United States today are prepaid cards.
Yeah.
So we have
of
to,
all kinds.
Yeah. We have to start thinking not about this as alternative financial services, just as a secondary tier of banking products and services. So what do you think of the players in the fintech space, Julie?
Well, first of all, we obviously want to make sure that we're utilizing technology in the best way possible for New Yorkers, and that is one of the reasons why our Office of Financial Empowerment is doing a mobile business survey and study, because we really want to see how people are utilizing technology for financial empowerment. We know what's happening globally in that space. We want to see what we can do creatively and innovatively here in New York. So we're really excited about looking at some of these issues and seeing how we can better use technology to financially empower New Yorkers.
Let me ask the guests in the studio here. What have you guys seen in terms of, you know, tech that you think can contribute to solving this problem, Esther?
Well, one that I'm an investor in, other than Movin, of course, is Paperx,
yeah.
Which is it goes mostly through employers. It's education, and it has enough of a social mission that we don't work with loan sharks or
right.
sleaze bags, and basically help people get their payroll with a either a credit or a debit card and spend it wisely and so forth and so on. And since I'm on the air, I want to recommend a book
sure.
called Scarcity.
Okay, who's
by
the author?
Two guys, Eldar Shafir and Sendil Mullanathan.
Okay, cool.
And my Twitter explanation of this book was to explain scarcity to rich people. Talk about time, not money.
Right.
And you see why people make what look like stupid decisions, but if you don't have a lot of money, unfortunately, it costs more than it costs a rich guy.
There's a great saying about this. It's very expensive to be poor.
Yes.
You know, when it comes particularly to, you know, access to financial services. David?
Well, first of all, Esther and I are in several of the same companies, including both PayPerks and Movin, but both of which are actually having a major impact on these things. So, you know, PayPerks is aimed at the unbanked, and it's trying to get people into the system, and it's, you know, it really is interesting. And Movin is, as you well know,
a Fitbit for your wallet.
Yes. In terms of
quantified self.
Quantified self and quantified financial self, right?
Yeah.
So I think that what we're seeing is a world in which more and more things get connected, as more and more, whether it's your money, your health, everything in here, you'll be able to finally apply, whether it's not robo-advisors or AI or additional things to make this all work. So we're a ways from that happening yet. But the one thing that I don't think people fully understand is the speed with which all this is changing. I mean, it's changing at light speed. And just because for balance over here, Esther was pointing to scarcity. So the flip side of that is a book called Abundance.
By
Peter Diamandis.
Well, Peter was a guest on the show a few weeks ago and spoke about both Abundance and Bold.
So he's also a friend of all of ours. Peter's the founder of Singularity University, which we all teach at, which is all about dealing with exponential change in finance and these other areas as well.
I was very fortunate to do the opening keynote of the Exponential Finance event here a few weeks ago with Peter. So that was, he's great.
Yeah. XPRIZE as well.
Yeah, XPRIZE, Spaceship One, of course. Julie, why do you think New York has maybe a technological advantage here? Do you think that, you know, with Silicon Alley and all these entrepreneurs like, you know, John, who's here with Betterman, and all this investment going into fintech startups, why is New York a great place for this?
Well, it's a technology hub, and we have to utilize the tremendous tech talent and innovation talent that exists in New York to ensure that the unbanked become banks. I mean, one of the real challenges and obstacles that exist in terms of the research that we've done at our Office of Financial Empowerment that prevents people from becoming banked is negative records and check systems, which are a serious barrier to opening up a bank account. Oftentimes, people are not aware that they have a negative record in check systems, and check systems doesn't oftentimes tell consumers why they're being denied. So one of the things that we're very focused on is getting banks to not utilize check systems, because we know that that is turning away many people who really should be banked but are not becoming banked. And so if we can come up with better technology options for the banks, we think that would be definitely a step in the right direction.
And speaking of New York and New York fintech, I would be remiss if I didn't mention a great site called digital.nyc, which many of us have been involved with, which is the centerpiece for all of the entire New York tech startup world. So you can find a whole bunch of companies in fintech and events in fintech and podcasts in fintech there. So digital.nyc.
Yeah, did you guys? We had Boris Johnson, the mayor of London, on a few weeks ago, and I asked him why London was such a great fintech center. And he said, "Because we've got bars and we've got the vibe." And when it was more about why London's a good place to be.
Well, it so happens that last week I was with Boris Johnson in London for the launch of Tech.London, which was modeled after Digital.NYC. So that's the second city. So we're really sister cities. Both of these are the two fintech capitals of the world.
And I think that is, you know, we are in tandem, you know, leading the charge globally. I think, you know, if you did a cross section, at least 50% of fintech investment is between those two cities.
Yeah. Hong Kong is losing some of the lure lately.
Yeah. Hong Kong, Singapore, you know, there's other cities vying for this third or fourth or fifth place, but New York and London are so far ahead at this stage. So how is it recruiting people in New York, John, and finding talent?
Well, I'm in New York because I think this is the best city to live in the world. It's a great place to travel from, as Esther said. It's a great place to come home to.
Yes.
It's a contrast from everywhere else you go. And it's a great place to attract young people. I mean, everyone wants to come here after school. And we recruit engineers and junior marketing folks from all the great universities on the East Coast. We have all the best investment minds in the world here all around us in New York City, recruiting them from hedge funds and banks and so on. And they're just, you know, sick of that environment, and they want to get out and they want to make the world a better place. And you know, it's an amazing recruiting environment.
Absolutely.
For us.
So we have a caller. Just quickly, David. We have a caller, Mike King. No relation, by the way. Mike, are you on?
How do you know?
I am, Brett. First of all, congratulations on 100 episodes.
Esther asked if we're related. Are we related?
No, we are not. only via the FinTech Mafia, I'm afraid. Congratulations on 100 episodes. I'm looking forward to 100 more. And I just have one question for you and the guests. Those who do not embrace this digital change that is coming, you were speaking about epitaphs earlier. What will be on the memorial of the battleground where all of the dead banks and fintechs that don't embrace the future, what will it say?
What'll be on Jamie Dimon's tombstone? No, let's not pick on him personally. But thanks, Mike.
I've said that any company that was designed for success in the 20th century is doomed to failure in the 21st because things are changing so fast. And so I think the epitaph is going to have to be they were unable to change fast enough.
Yeah. I think it will be, oops, I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
Or that wonderful one, I wasn't paying a oh, look, a butterfly.
Yeah, I never knew it was going to happen so quickly. There was this great quote from a Tennessee banker, and he said, I never thought online banking would happen in my lifetime. And this was in 97.
But that's something that what people don't come.
He was probably a smoker.
I keep coming back. When I was in high school, I went to the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, and they had an automated teller machine of the future. And you would get a little paper card, and you would put it in, and you would get play money out. And this was so mind-boggling that this would someday you'd have robots being your tellers. Look how fast this moved.
So, you know, we talk about the bank account of the future. John?
Epitaph.
I think all of these banks are moving as fast as they can. And I think one of the earlier callers said that they're investing heavily in technology. I think that they see it. And some of them will catch up.
I think that's what will be on their epitaph.
they saw it but couldn't move fast.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So listen, we've got a couple of minutes before we close out, guys. So, you know, just give me your summary in terms of like 30 seconds. What's going to be big for fintech over the next 12, 18 months?
I think in general there's been a lack of imagination about how much things are going to change in fintech, and sometimes people think about Betterment, for instance, as you know, just a way to manage a portfolio. And as we look forward, I think we'll think of it as more of a full financial advisor taking over your entire financial life, your full balance sheet,
your digital financial.
So, briefly, I'm going to mention another of my investments. It's called Aradian. They sell to banks in Africa, and they're not about the transactions; they're about the lending process. Again, it's not simply making the money flow faster. It's helping people use that money to build real long-term value, investing locally in whatever it is that local people need.
And I think that the thing coming up is going to be everything coming together. I think right now fintech is a whole lot of different silos. I think you're going to see payment systems and banking and public market investing and private market investing and savings and cards and payment cards all into one thing. And whether it's in your Apple Watch that three out of the four of us are wearing or other kinds of things.
In the cloud.
One integrated thing.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll say on behalf of the city, what we're very focused on is financial inclusion. Mayor de Blasio announced the launch of the Municipal ID program earlier this year. We're very focused on the banking piece, and we think that in terms of financial technology, it's so important that undocumented New Yorkers are financially included in the system. So we have a number of banks, including unions, that are accepting the UCID now.
Time, Julie. Commissioner Menon, David Rose, Esther Dyson, and John Stein, thank you all for joining the 100th episode of Breaking Banks. We hope to have you back soon. That's it that's a wrap on the 100th episode. And another quick shout out to Rachel Morrissey, our producer. Thanks for being with us.
Congrats.
As well.
Been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the latest in fintech news.